Play pitcher, shortstop, third base, and center field.
Those are the prime positions.
That's what I'm trying to tell you.
It's time for your Sunrise Guys, Dirt and Sprague.
Yeah, you were the best player on your team.
Yes, then we talking.
More Dirt and Sprague.
Scrape cleanup on aisle three. Come get it.
Sounds like you're just an athlete.
Yeah.
Andy Dirt Johnson, Brandon Sprague.
Ping pong, baseball, football, basketball.
Tennis, swimming, lacrosse, whatever you need me to play, I'm going to go do it.
Dirt and Sprague on the Fan Sports Network.
Hockey.
Whatever, on the rink, whatever you need me to do, it don't matter.
Hey, welcome back in. Hour number three, Dirt and Sprague here on Portland Sports Leader, 105.1 FM, The Fan, 1080 AM, YouTube app, Odyssey app. YouTube app. Yeah, I guess YouTube app. Odyssey app. Live on YouTube. We're everywhere, man. We're also on Twitch, but nobody ever tells us that. So if you're watching on Twitch, shout out to you.
Do people really watch on Twitch?
I don't tease
the Twitch.
I have no idea. I just tease the YouTube every day.
So. That's what I tease because I'm a YouTube guy.
We're on the Twitch as well.
I've conditioned myself, Dirt, now where if I'm like yesterday, I'm home alone, I'm doing some show prep. I'm like, I'm going to watch something while I do some show prep. I've kind of become conditioned, and I know I'm old fuddy-duddy here. Mm-hmm. I'm starting to turn YouTube on sometimes before my TV, like YouTube TV stuff.
Usually the main go-to for me when I turn my TV on.
Because I want to see some of the pods that I follow.
There's
for
podcasts, press conferences, right. There's different things. So while you're looking stuff up, you might hear, oh, that was interesting. I want to pull that for the start of the show, right? So there's definitely a part of that. We got a lot to get to. Dan Rubenstein's going to join us coming up here in about 10, 15 minutes or so. We'll talk to him about the upcoming season in college football, mainly around the Ducks. He's a Duck alumni, so we'll get his thoughts on their upcoming year and an inexperienced roster. I don't want to holster it too long. I don't want to leave the people waiting in the lurch, and I'm wondering if I'm alone in this takeaway. This will be like a very Clint Eastwood, I'm sitting on my porch yelling at you to get off my lawn take, so I just want it to be known. I understand the vantage point that it appears that I'm coming from, and I totally get it. I am very anti-Savannah Banana. Like, the idea of going to a Savannah Banana game sounds miserable to me.
Why?
Sounds miserable to me.
Why? It's just have a beer, a dog, and watch some funny like hip thrusting while they throw baseball.
It just does nothing for me. Why didn't if I'm gonna pay money to
you're
go
anti Savannah?
I am. And mainly it's because they keep showing up on ESPN and it's kind of grinding my gears because it's not really sport. It's like showing Globetrotter games. Which has its purpose for kids. Like, I get that there's an audience for it.
I'd say it's more like wrestling.
But for me, like, whenever I turn on a game or, like, ESPN's still on my TV and the Savannah Bananas come on, I find myself yelling, like, why would you want to buy tickets to go watch dudes do a backflip and then throw a ball to first base when you could just go watch actual baseball?
Well, the funny thing is they did this stadium tour over the summer.
Yes.
They were finding at the different ballparks they'd go to, obviously they go to some of these cities. Those teams wouldn't be very good. Their ticket prices for the Savannah Bananas were like double the price of their big league team.
It's a huge hit. It's massive. It's like
the Hamilton of baseball.
It absolutely is. And I'm poo-pooing it a little bit. I cringe every time.
You're anti-Savannah Banana.
I am anti-Savannah Banana. Like if they came to Portland and they did it, I don't know what state, I would not want to go in the least.
Yeah.
Like I don't even know if you gave me free tickets if I would go. I'd rather go to a Timbers game than a Savannah Bananas game.
Well, what is that supposed to mean?
That it's an actual sport.
We went to a Timbers game. We had a great time with Chuck.
I mean, it's incredibly boring because it's soccer and they don't really do anything 97% of the time, but I digress. I'd rather watch that than the Savannah Bananas doing backflips and
really?
Like hip thrusts at home plate and then the umpire doing it. I just.
So the gimmicky goofiness of
baseball. The gimmicky goofiness of it is
out.
Just. Okay. I'm out. Swag, are you in or out on Savannah Bananas?
I'm not seeking it out.
Wow. No, you and Swag. How's it feel to be
I knew
old?
That he would be on my team here. That's why
too.
I wanted to throw it over to him. You're younger and hipper than we are. I wanted the old man support here.
Savannah
before
Bananas do not offer me anything.
I mean, they offer you entertainment.
I don't think it's entertaining.
Yes.
You've got to get your take.
I got him.
You didn't
with
get him.
Him.
He got you.
That's true. That's
he got you.
I've infiltrated the Swigart age tax bracket.
He
I
has
think,
the face of somebody who would say he hates the Savannah Bananas. You have a look of somebody that would dig it.
This is like, and I will say this, it reminded me of the vibe a little bit because a listener pointed this out. I think
Savannah Bananas is wild.
It's Like this, because I was at the LIV golf event when they were here at Pumpkin Ridge.
Yeah.
It was like, oh my God, Phil Mickelson's playing Pumpkin Ridge. How am I not going to go to that?
In theory, it is a competition.
At least in theory, it is golf. But walking around, I had the same feeling of like, this isn't serious at all. Yeah. They're playing music. They're in shorts. Everybody's got guaranteed money. Nobody cares right now. They're just out here because they have to be out here and they don't want some, you know, Saudi guy taking their kneecaps off. It just, I had that same vibe watching it of like, this is not a serious sport, and I will never watch this, I will never follow this, I will never care about this. Now, for some people, just having golf on of any kind is fine, and you like YouTube golf, and LIV golf, and PGA golf, doesn't matter, sure. Each their own. But for me, I'll never watch it, I'll never care about it, and the same goes with the Savannah
Well, but
Bananas.
I don't think it's a game.
And part of me is like, as a sports fan, yeah. Almost angered that they're on ESPN. If this was like a ESPN The Ocho Day, I heard when you were filling in for the firm of Harrison Moran, they were talking about the Ocho thing, you know, where cornhole's coming up.
Cornhole,
and it's always around dartboard. It's this time of year, right?
All that stuff.
Dude, if you want to have the Savannah Bananas have a marathon on that day, I'm all for it. But taking up regular ESPN programming for that garbage pisses me off.
Wow.
You'll take the Little League World Series over the
I'd rather watch the Little League World Series over the Savannah Bananas.
You'd rather watch these old angry dudes get super angry at each other and treat the kids like they're 45-year-old veterans in Major League Baseball.
I'm going to have dirt watching the Tennis Channel before much longer.
That would be funny to rattle off the real sports he would watch before he'd watch Savannah Bananas. I think I could get him to watch NASCAR.
I would definitely watch a NASCAR race before I watch a Savannah Bananas. At least there's a chance of an accident happening, and that would be awesome.
Okay, let me ask you
I'd
this.
I'd rather watch like tennis. Like
you have to watch
not
one of
all
these.
Of tennis, but you give me like a Wimbledon like semifinal kind of thing. Like
sure.
I'd rather watch
Sinner
that.
Alcaraz. You're all in, right?
Without a doubt, more so than the Savannah Bananas.
You have to pick one of these programs to watch. Okay. They're the same length of time run. WWE or the Savannah Bananas? Because that, to me, I used to love wrestling, and I'm not anti-wrestling.
God, hard.
I'm becoming a little annoyed. If you want my old man take, it's
this. What's your old man take of the day?
I already kind of gave you a stupid one, but I'll give you an old man take. I'm becoming a little annoyed of the ESPN WWE shove down my throat crossover stuff where I'm having to pretend the WWE is
an actual sport.
Well, it's a sport
and I don't
in the
mean,
sense
like,
of what
no.
they're doing.
They're athletes.
Yes.
They are athletes.
There was some highlights at yesterday's SummerSlam that I'm like, dude, how do you physically even get
it's
up
It's not
after
a sport,
that?
Though. It's all rigged. Like, they plan the winner before the thing starts. Yeah. It's not a sport.
So, like, when you're spending SportsCenter devoting time to, like, breaking down
Can
Seth
Rollins.
Can you
believe what happened last night? He faked an injury.
Look, again, I'm not anti-wrestling. I love the entertainment value that wrestling provides. But having it cross into my SportsCenter is when I'm like, get off my lawn.
Yeah, these are the kind of things, like, if this is what it takes, like, if my kid, if Teddy Ballgame's into wrestling, I'll watch wrestling with
It'll
him.
It'll be fun.
It'll be different. Yeah. If he doesn't care about baseball because it's slow and boring, which I get the argument. I understand where you're coming from. And he says, Dad, I want to watch the Savannah Bananas. I'll watch a Savannah Banana game because I want him to be entertained.
Sure.
But that's different to me than, like, being an adult and being like, I seek that. I want to go watch that. Instead of real baseball, I want to watch a guy with a cutoff t-shirt do a backflip at second base with six-pack abs.
Well, I find it more odd, like, you'd want to watch it over Major League Baseball because half the time I feel like their highlights are them hip-thrusting together.
Yes, it's just them, like, shaking and grooving.
What are you getting out of this?
You know, it's big for the ladies, I guess. Big for the kids.
I mean, shout out the ladies out there. Yeah. They need the proper hip-thrusting to make them happy. But I think my old take is I don't like the WWE crossover into my 20 minutes of SportsCenter. And you're just completely out of
just completely
the Savannah Bananas. Poll questions up. Are you pro or anti? And I'll give you credit. It's almost a 50-50 split on this.
I think there's a lot of olds out there that are with me. Somebody saying happy 55th birthday, Dirt. Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. What time's the senior deal at Freddy's this week? What day are we going? I heard it's Tuesdays. I'm excited.
IHOP's got a great senior breakfast slam going
like
on
right
now.
Like $5? What are we talking here?
$5.
It's a good deal. Somebody said the Savannah Bananas is a great way to grow the game of baseball against people who aren't typically interested in baseball. Interested. I see that argument. I will grant the floor to that argument.
I slightly disagree.
Contention would be, is there a track record record that proves that people who like get into it watching the bananas
will cross into
then are
it.
Now yeah. becoming actual baseball fans. And right. maybe they are. This is what LIV does. Not again to compare to it, but it's like we're trying to grow the game of golf. It's like, no, you're not. What are you growing? Are there more golf fans now than existed before your league came into existence? Like,
no.
What? No, you've just made more money. That's what you want. And you're not growing the game of golf. You just wanted to get paid more to do what you do.
Yeah, pro is up 66.7. Anti is down 33.3. But I'm sure that's going to go back and forth. I mean, I see that argument. I just kind of fundamentally disagree.
Like, if you're a kid...
If you like the Savannah Bananas, why are you tuning into Major League Baseball?
Right.
It's such a different...
Especially if you're a kid. Like, if you're a kid growing up watching it and you get into it, like somebody said, I hope Teddy Ballgame begs to go to a Savannah Bananas game in a couple years. He might, and I'll take him if that's what he wants to do. Like, I want my kid to be happy. I'm not going to deny him that opportunity.
You will not take him.
But I... Well, that's they're never going to come to Portland, first off. The Savannah Bananas will never come here.
Right.
So it won't be a problem that I have to face unless we're traveling to a town where the Savannah Bananas happen to be. I don't see how as a kid you go from that to then the slowed down normal version of baseball being palatable. It's almost like this is a problem in the NBA that we talk about a lot. And the NBA is very popular for kids, but it's not sitting and actually watching games. It's the NBA on TikTok. It's highlights. It's
highlights,
Steph.
Yeah.
It's dunks. It's yes. pushing and the fighting. And like that's what's important. It's those little snippets of basketball that are very popular with kids.
Right.
It's not sitting down and watching a game in the middle of November that's like 62 to 61 at the end of the third quarter when both teams are shooting 27% from three.
Well, what are those? I mean, I guess I've never seen any Savannah Banana actual baseball. I've only seen highlights of pitches and goofiness. What is the score of a Savannah Banana game?
I think they're relatively similar to normal baseball games. I don't think they're that high scoring.
Okay.
They just do stuff
they
when they do stuff.
They have orchestrated entertainment.
You run to first base on stilts.
Well, but
like I'm at the circus.
I do think the entertainment aspect, there are things that the Major League Baseball could take and not like, I'm not talking about dancing and uniformed, you know, pitches.
You need more hip thrusting in your baseball? Is that what you're arguing right now? Is there not enough hip thrusting?
That's a personal foul in football.
They need you need double pump in the seventh inning?
No, I don't need the double pump. Although, randomly, I know this is scatterbrained.
Yeah.
You just reminded me, I saw the Egg Bowl highlights from a couple years ago. Do you remember when the guy pissed after he scored the touchdown?
I do, the leg up in the end
zone. You know what I remember, and I forgot about that, was that he got called for a penalty.
They lost the game.
Took the tutty away.
Yeah. Did they take the touchdown away? I thought they moved the PAT back, and then he missed it or something. It, like, cost him the game.
Oh, okay.
I don't think they could. Did. I don't think you can take a touchdown off
well,
the board.
Well, the guy missed the kick, and I remember thinking, like, oh, man, that sucks.
That was the craziest way to lose a game, was he went pee in the end zone, and then they missed the PA. Or maybe they needed a two-point conversion to tie it or something, but then they had to do it from, like, the 20-yard line.
But my point is, like, there are little things you can take of, like, what are they doing that's entertaining that we could apply to our game? That's all.
People on stilts, man.
I mean, we have mascots.
Guy juggling bowling pins running to first base.
Let's not act like they haven't put mascots on stilts before at a baseball game. Let's ask Dan Rubenstein if he is pro or anti-Savannah Banana.
Dan Rubenstein's next. We'll talk some Oregon Duck football with him. Your thoughts on the Savannah Bananas, if I could talk, are welcome at the fan text line 503-864-6326. I didn't see that showing up on my bingo card today. I didn't even have that planned. It's just been a take I've been cooking up for a while. They keep showing up on my TV, and I keep getting angry.
I don't need Brock Lesnar on my Sports Center. I just get it off.
Get it off.
Go away.
Move on from it. It's another poll question. What's worse being into, wrestling or the Savannah Bananas?
Oh, it's the Savannah Bananas.
Worse than wrestling?
Yeah, because wrestling's fun. It's just, wrestling is what it is.
Yeah.
I just don't want it on my Sports Center.
Just get it off my TV, man. Let's get to Dan Rubenstein. He is next on 105.1 FM, The Fam.
In this wide world of sports, some stories can slip through the cracks.
Now, before we do this, let's go over the ground rules.
Pelican Brewing presents The Daily Ticker, where Dirt and Sprague hit the big stories you've heard about and some you haven't.
How'd you do that? I'm not even mad. It's amazing.
The Daily Ticker on The Fan is poured by Pelican Brewing. Experience your hops differently with Hard Hops Blackberry hops-infused hard seltzers.
All right, Daily Ticker time, presented as always by our great friends at Pelican Brewing. Their Hard Hops presents today's Daily Ticker. Discover Hard Hops Blackberry Hop-Infused Hard Seltzer and experience your hops differently. Let's talk to a friend of the program and a known Oregon Duck. Very excited for college football to be right around the corner. Dan Rubenstein joining us, host of the Solid Verbal Podcast, and we love every chance we get to catch up with him. Dan, before we talk college football with you, We need to settle a discussion about something in sports and wondering where you sit on it, and that is the Savannah Bananas. Yay or nay?
Oh, yay. Why would anybody be nay? People, you got, like, fun police in your office?
Yeah, I'm working next to one. He just asked you that question.
Yeah, I'm an old curmudgeon. Give me real baseball, man. If my kid's into it, I'll take him to a game. But, like, as an adult, I have no interest in watching it on my own.
I know, but is anybody, like, forcing you at gunpoint to watch it? There's, like, you can watch, like, a Twins-Blue Jays game whenever you want.
It's a valid argument. It's a valid argument.
And we were talking about, like, football, and he goes, I got a Savannah Banana take. And I'm like, what?
They're showing up on ESPN all the time, Dan. Get them off my TV. I'm old. I like to yell at things. This is how I operate. Fall camp is here. How's Dan Rubenstein feeling about this version of the Oregon Ducks?
Very good. I'm feeling very good about this team. And, you look at the number of teams in college football who would trade rosters with Oregon, and it's 130. Right out of 135 or so. There is more depth than I can remember on this defense, not necessarily in terms of proven talent and proven production, but in terms of what we perceive to be a talent level and how well the recruiting and the transfer portal has gone, especially on defense. I feel great, but once we see a little bit more from the receivers and where this offensive line is, then I think I feel pretty great about the offense as well. But in terms of known playmakers on both sides of the ball, they're heading into the season in a terrific position, obviously with the confidence that knowing they can go through this conference unscathed or in a major way. I don't know how you can feel anything but terrific about where Oregon is right now.
And I don't know if this question's an easy answer for you or if it involves the coach aspect to it. What side of the ball in Eugene do you feel like you trust the most going into the season?
Still the offense, because Oregon is going to measure itself in how it reacts to some of the best offenses in the conference, if not the country. And we saw the defense let this team down in the biggest game of the season last year. And it's not on the players. It's a combination coaches, maybe players and communication. And it's at this point where Oregon is measuring itself against the best and going down the way that they did to Ohio State, with the sort of coverage breakdowns, communication breakdowns, and having, obviously a terrific offensive coordinator, no stranger to Oregon fans, and Chip Kelly just pick this scheme apart. You want to see how Oregon is going to be able to respond on defense this year with a ton of talent on all three levels. But I still think there's more to go into the season confidently with this offense because of Dante Moore having the time in Eugene, because of the receivers having the time in Eugene, how they've recruited, bringing in Mekhi Hughes. The ceiling on Kenyon Sadiq seems higher than any Oregon tight end ever. Doesn't mean he's going to win the Mackey and be the best ever, but it seems athletically and how hard he blocks, like there's just a ton to love about what they can do on offense. Whereas with defense, we still need to see that next step, I think.
Yeah, I think that's a good point for my next question. We're talking with Dan Rubenstein, host of the Solid Verbal podcast. You can follow it on Twitter, at Solid Verbal Goon. A great job covering college football. On that note, I agree with you on the coordinator point, and I think it's a really big year for Tosh Lapoy. He didn't have the greatest track record as a known X's and O's guy coming in. He was more known as a guy who could find kind of loopholes in the rules. Oregon fan remembers that back in the day. He's a great recruiter. He's a good locker room guy. Like, there was a lot of pluses with Tosh Lapoy, but he's not known as this game-planning X's and O's wizard when it comes to the defense. Is this a big year for him to kind of put some of that to bed? And I know there's a lot of new faces out there and some inexperience, but the way that you pointed to, the way the season ended for them defensively last year in the last 2 weeks was horrendous, even though they won the Penn State game and the Big Ten championship, of just Lanning having to maybe make a decision about somebody who he's had a really good relationship with for a long time. That's not an easy thing for a head coach to do.
No, it's true, and it's a younger Oregon staff by and large, and obviously it's paid dividends recruiting. But a lot of the times when you look around this sport and you look at some of the defensive coordinators specifically who have succeeded over time, there's a lot of grizzled older minds, right? You look at Nick Saban, you look at Kirby Smart. Not Kirby Smart's not old, but with what Jim Knowles did at Ohio State, Tom Allen at Penn State, which, by the way, Oregon did a nice job gashing Tom Allen's Penn State defense, to be clear. There's just a lot of guys that call great college defenses that have been through it, know what to lean on, know how to game plan. Not saying Tosh Lupoi can't develop into that, But there is, I think, there's a certain amount of experience needed over time on a huge level to say, okay, this is how they're finding mismatches. This is how we're going to counter. And Oregon took far too long to counter in that game. And you look at the first, you know, two-thirds, 80% of last year's schedule. This was a terrific defense. But at the end of the season, and I don't know if it was a legs thing. I don't know if it was the fact that they're playing against Penn State and Ohio State. But this is they looked lost at times against these teams. You look at the beginning of the Penn State game, obviously the beginning of Ohio State. That's pointing to game plan. That's pointing to getting teams ready because it's not a talent thing with Oregon. So, yeah, I think this year could go a long way to cement or improve Tosh Lupoi's standing.
Dan, I think you and Ty do a good job of, like, we kind of know where maybe some allegiances lie in some ways, but you guys are pretty objective and fair when you talk college football, which is a really tough thing to do. Sometimes people get too into their own fandom. How delicious is it got to be for you, though, for Oregon to kind of be flying under this little Big Ten radar and Penn State having all the expectations on them this season?
It's really interesting because we've seen stories the past couple weeks of, like, hey, are we not talking about Oregon enough? Should we be having an Oregon conversation where the conversation around Penn State is like, if not now, when? Is this Penn State's last chance? Like, there seems to be so much pressure on Penn State, and they've been in this spot before and failed to deliver. So, yeah, it's kind of fun needling Ty, Penn State alumnus, Penn State fan, with, like, hey, man, first-year defensive coordinator, quarterback who didn't complete a pass against Notre Dame to a wide receiver. Like, this is it. This is the whole thing. So I like it.
All the pressure on James Franklin. What could go wrong in that instance? We've never seen that before. No. I'm curious, Dan, how closely you still follow Oregon State and just what your read is on their situation. You know, we were talking yesterday with some buddies who are Beaver fans about how just getting out of this purgatory for one more year will be very helpful and having a home and having a conference. But Oregon State fan, I think, still trying to find their lot in life and where they fit into this bigger picture since being left behind. As a national college football voice, what do you make of the Beavs and where they're at right now?
Hate it. I like Oregon State. I've liked Oregon State throughout the years. I like, as an Oregon fan, Oregon beating Oregon State, but I have too many good memories about fun Beaver players to enjoy what's happening right now with the Beavers. They should be in a major conference. Wazoo should be in a major conference. The new look Pac-12 doesn't do a lot for me, and Oregon State and Washington State being in the new look Pac-12 is a bummer to me. So I hope that, you know, in the next few years, we can get to a place in the sport where we're having a conversation about Oregon State and Wazoo in major conferences again, fingers crossed. But it's all a bummer to me. I hope they win a bunch of games. I hope the rivalry game with Oregon continues and is a fun game that Oregon can win every single year. But no, the whole situation is still not fun for me, and especially as a West Coaster. Like, I want Oregon playing all of these teams all of the time. I don't know.
Yeah, no, we're with you 100%. If you took the Texas game off Ohio State's schedule, and I know you can't because that's the big one, it's maybe the biggest game of that weekend, but you look at the schedule, who is the non-Texas game? What team do you think Ohio State slips up at the most within the Big Ten if it's not Penn State or Texas?
If it's not Penn State or Texas, I should dial up Ohio State's schedule in front of me right now. Honestly, it's the Washington game is tricky, but they have a bye before that game. Mm-hmm. But that's a long travel day. Otherwise, I don't know. I feel like they've lost three straight to a team on their schedule, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Am I crazy?
No. And okay, it's on the road this year.
And it's on the road. It's in Ann Arbor against Michigan. And when you look at their schedule outside of Penn State, I think Michigan, again, just the Big Ten portion of the schedule, outside of the Penn State game, I think Michigan will play defense better than anybody on that schedule will do anything, if that makes sense. So that would be my answer. The fact that it's on the road, I think it's still Michigan.
Okay. Dude, if they don't win the title and they lose to Michigan again.
Has a coach ever gone from national title to hot seat immediately the next year?
Because that Gene Chizik.
Yeah, Gene Chizik, true. Over-under, I think, in Vegas on the Ducks is 10.5. Are we taking the over or the under?
I think I'm going to take I have them at 10-2, so I'm going to take the under. I just think college football is hard enough. The Big Ten is difficult enough that I think Oregon will make the playoff at 10-2. I think 11-1 is likely, but not crazy likely. You know, the Penn State game is going to be tough. And then Oregon's schedule, they have a bye before that Iowa game, but a lot of good teams have gone to Iowa City and lost 15 to 13. Outside of the Iowa game, there's not anything that's obvious to me. I think Indiana will be quality, but Oregon has a bye before that. And Washington's going to be decent, and that's on the road. So the math just tells me it's, you know, for Oregon to go 11-1, that means they need to win 24 out of 25 regular season Big Ten games. That's a tall ask. That's a really big ask. So I'm going to say under, but I don't feel great about it.
Yeah, that's still a playoff team.
Is there a great team being hyped that you just really, for whatever reason, not buying into this season?
As like a legit national championship contender?
Yeah.
Well, kind of all of them, just because they all have new quarterbacks. But Penn State might be my answer there, just because they are not a program that has typically shouldered expectations super well. And I still think they're going to be a playoff team. But, yeah, you look around the sport and Alabama, Notre Dame, Oregon, Georgia, in terms of full-time new starting quarterback. Like, there's so many new full-time starting quarterbacks that one of these teams, and I guess I'm going to say Penn State, and they don't have a new starting quarterback. But, yeah, I guess that's my answer. Because also it's a new DC and Jim Knowles, who I think – usually takes a minute to get his defense installed. He's more of a year two guy. So that would be my answer right now.
All right. Great stuff. Can't wait for college football to start. It's right around the corner. We're eagerly awaiting the beginning of the season. Dan Rubenstein, you can check out his podcast, A Solid Verbal, wherever you get your podcasts. Phenomenal college football content. Always great catching up with you. Go Ducks. And hopefully we can do this again soon.
Yes, sir. Can't wait.
There you go. Dan Rubenstein of the Solid Verbal College Football Podcast. Good stuff from him.
Great stuff. They've had some great episodes. They dove in all the previews for the conferences.
Just
the,
had our buddy Pate on.
Yeah, that's
on
right.
The
they did a crossover with Josh Pate. They do a great job.
So let's talk a little bit about some of that college football angle. Also, a team that he mentioned there, their quarterback is looking very good early in fall camp. Now,
I love these reports.
Everybody looks good in fall camp, right? Everybody's feeling great. Everybody's team's good. Everybody's practicing good. Everybody's playing good. Somebody had a great tweet I read the other day. It was like, my beat reporters are telling the truth about my team, but your beat reporters are lying and your team is going to be terrible.
Right.
That's usually the way that it goes. One quarterback who's looking good. Also, a little bit more on the Tosh Lapoy front, because I find that interesting. We'll get to that next. Pelican Brewing Hard Hops presents today's Daily Ticker. Discover Hard Hops Blackberry Hop Infused Hard Seltzer and experience your hops differently. Some more college football next. All right, welcome back in. The takes are coming in hot and heavy on the Savannah Bananas this morning. Somebody threatening to fight me in a steel cage match on Twitter. It's just good. A couple of thoughts that I do think are valid that I, you know, I cook these things up, and then I need to help them from the listeners to kind of solidify my opinion on it.
Got to be honest with you. Fully glad to know that coming in today, I'm like, these takes on Anthony Richardson and Scoot Henderson
will be forgotten in 30 minutes.
God bless you.
Because Dirt's going to say something about the Savannah Bananas.
Bananas.
He's going to fire everybody up. Somebody's saying, sounds like Dirt's beef is with ESPN, not the Bananas. There's definitely part of that. Like, part of this is ESPN showing Savannah Banana games, which I just find laughable and ridiculous. You want to go to them, they're in your town, you want to take your kid, whatever, that's fine. People keep asking, well, would you go to a Harlem Globetrotter game? It's like, yeah, dude, if my kid wanted to go. As an adult, would you buy tickets with buddies to go see the Harlem Globetrotters?
Probably because they're $5.
It's the same thing, right? Like, I'd have no... If I'm going to spend tickets and go to a ball game with a buddy, like, I'm going to go to a Blazer game. Who's in town? Is Giannis in town? I'd rather watch that than watch guys, you know... Hey, they won again. Do you know that? They won again.
Your Lake Oswego is showing.
7,000-0 in the history of the franchise. Huh? I'm waiting on pins and needles to see how it ends.
Giannis might be traded.
Somebody's saying there is some idiocracy level of nonsense to the Savannah Bananas that makes me wonder if it's the perfect symbol for the collapse of the American society. It is the KFC double down chicken sandwich of sports. Yeah. Disgusting and a bit unhealthy.
I mean, but that to Dan Rubenstein's point, like, nobody's forcing you to watch it.
They are. They're holding my eyes open. So there you go. It's Savannah Banana Takes are welcome at the fan text line. 503-864-6326. I'm going to get to this. I'll talk about the quarterback in the next segment. But I do think it's interesting, and he kind of agreed with me there. And I'll use a team who has had a lot of success as an example. Like, I thought that Ohio State and Ryan Day had to do this. Now, I can't remember the name of their DC off the top of my head.
Who?
That they had before Jim Knowles. But Ohio State had this where they were scoring a ton of points as an offense. They were... You had the C.J. Stroud era, remember? And one of the driving forces, ironically, of it happening was when Mario went into Columbus and beat them. Mm-hmm. And they dominated the line of scrimmage, and they ran the ball, and they were getting out physicaled by Michigan. And, like, he had to make a change of defensive coordinator, which isn't an easy decision to make. And he did. He brought in Jim Knowles, took him a year or two, but Jim Knowles is known as one of the best defensive minds we've ever seen in the sport. They win a national title, and then Penn State's willing to pay out of the butt for him to go from Columbus up to State College. And it's just, to me, it's an interesting year for Tosh Sapoy, where I think there's a base level of confidence that I have in the offense going into the year just because of how much talent they have there mm-hmm. and how good they've been for, you know, consistently under Dan Lanning, really in the first 3 years he's been there. Of like, you're going to eventually have to have an above the level X's and O's defensive coordinator to maybe get you over the hump in some of these bigger games. And Lanning could be that with his extra voice. I don't know if Tosh Lapoy is. It's a big question mark on this coaching staff.
Greg Madison before Jim Knowles. Yeah. He was there for 19 and 20.
He's there for 2 years.
And then Jim Knowles comes in. Look, yeah. I mean, I hear your point, man. I don't look at Tosh Lapoy and always think like the X's and O's genius stuff. I think part of my stand, I don't even really have any big questions on Will Stein. I kind of know what he is offensively.
Right.
It's more just like who's going to perform better.
Yeah.
The Lapoy one, it didn't certainly end well, but like I in a weird, maybe even unfair way, I kind of look at that as a package combo. I don't look at it just as Tosh Lapoy. Now, I know Lanning isn't, he's not calling the stuff, but given his background, I said this about Oregon State last year with Trent Bray. It's like, yo, why is the defense, why is it this? Like, your head coach knows defense.
Right, should have
a bigger
say.
And you have a D coordinator. Like, yeah. Double team this thing. And that's kind of how I view Oregon as a defense. It's probably somewhat unfair to Tosh Lapoy and the work him and his staff do film-wise and game plan-wise. But when the head coach is hired because he was a stout D coordinator from Georgia, he won a national championship, I tend to look at that and go, combo deal. Now, maybe their defense lets down and Lanning's moments where he's not involved as day-to-day or minute-to-minute, I should say, with the defense, maybe he'll make a switch there if their defense doesn't perform well. But I just kind of look at Oregon's defense and say a collective, whereas the other side I say Will Stein.
Yeah, it's interesting because I tend to agree with you there. I also look at them in the way they built it the last couple of years of, I used to chuckle when Lapoy's only a good recruiter was kind of used as a criticism, which I get because you want somebody that has both hats, can be a brilliant X's and O's guy and a great recruiter, but there's not a lot of those kind of coaches out. Like Jim Knowles wasn't known as a dominant recruiter. He was known as a brilliant football mind. There's different, like guys have their different hats that they wear. Like you wanted to have that base level to get the program to where you wanted to from a talent standpoint. It helps have an elite recruiter that can bring in those big hitters. Now it's just, I'm just curious. Like, and maybe it's, maybe there's like a graph in which you do the, you know, I'm a decent play caller and a decent defensive mind, but I'm such a good recruiter that I turn into a dominant defense because my talent level is so high mm-hmm. that I don't have to be brilliant. But to me, it's a big question at the end of the year. If their defense has bad moments in big games and they don't quite deliver when they need to most, I'm just going to be curious how they because Lanning has not had to face that problem yet. His first offensive coordinator was good and left after a year to become a head coach.
He loses him. He doesn't fire
him. He loses
him,
right? Yeah. Will Stein is a guy who is considered to be a next big up-and-coming name in the head coaching circles. And if Oregon's offense has a good year, mm-hmm. his name's going to be a hot commodity again next offseason. He hasn't had the opposite problem. And not that their defense has been terrible. They were largely very good last year. But in those big games when you needed them the most, at the end of the season, they were bad against Penn State and they were terrible against Ohio State. And so I'm just curious. It's a big storyline going into this year.
See, the thing I have that's tough on that is like, not that you're not right. You're talking about the team that won the national championship.
No doubt.
And you're talking about another team that was a drive away from beating Notre Dame to get to a national championship.
Here's the point, though, and I totally agree with that.
I'm not saying it's okay. I just like it's tough because you're talking about two of
the four best teams in the sport
last year.
No doubt about that. I think the question becomes if you want to elevate yourself to that level, is that a move? Like, is that the reason you're falling short? Like, it's not that big of a get. They beat Ohio State last year, and I know the Rose Bowl didn't go in their favor, obviously. They won the game the first time they played them. They beat Penn State the first time they played them. But is that small difference, the difference between being a runner-up every year or winning a national championship? I think that's the tough part that they're in, is that they're right up close to the ceiling, and what is it going to take to close that small gap that exists between you and the top of the sport.
You can disagree with me on this one, and maybe the coaching stuff will bear itself out this year, and you'll end up going, yeah, Lapoy wasn't quite the dude. They can elevate. Oh, Penn State did this. Did they not look at their situation?
They just did
and
the
say,
same thing.
We're going to steal their D coordinator because yes. he's better. That certainly can exist.
Let's upgrade there.
I tend to lean, though, in most situations, Lanning brought him back, so I just go, get the right combination of Jimmy and Joes.
Yeah, and maybe they have that this year.
And I think that's what Ohio State did. It didn't look like they were doing it because, man, it was a weird regular season, but then it all clicked and everything right. came together for them. I just, you know, that offense, too, against that Ohio State team, it wasn't just that Ohio State bludgeoned them.
Yeah.
It was that the offense for Oregon was
no help
a
either.
Disaster.
No help at all either.
And they had the experience at quarterback. They had some line guys. Like, they had experience. It was a disaster at the worst possible time. So I kind of tend to lean, once you get that right combination of Jimmy Joes, because we didn't really have a Lapoy question most of last regular season. In fact, there were some pretty bright spots in that Ohio State game.
Yeah. People questioned it after the Gentee game because he went off, and I think as the year went on, you're like, oh, he's pretty good. It's kind of hard to tackle
yeah,
that guy.
Yeah, dude, he's one of the best we've ever seen do it at the position
he's
in the
season.
He's
running through eight guys behind the line of scrimmage. That's not really an X's and O's problem.
Well, also, his total yardage in that game, I forget what the number was, but 70 of it came on one run.
Yeah, I mean, it was, yeah, he had three or four carries that were the bulk majority of what he did that day.
Yeah.
But it'll be an interesting year. They get closer. Let's talk about one quarterback who's getting rave reviews in fall camp. Got to love fall camp reviews. What is the ceiling on this guy?
One guy's getting killed in fall camp. The NFL, at least.
Oh, yeah, we got some NFL notes to get to in the final hour as well. One more college football hit, and we'll do it next on 105.1 FM, The Fan. Welcome back in. Dusty sharing his thoughts on the Savannah Bananas.
The brand man told us it's like the Masters. You have a lottery system for tickets.
Taking over, dude. Somebody's got to put a stop to this. They're coming to Seattle in like a couple of weeks, I think.
Stadium tour?
Stadium tour, baby. Going to T-Mobile. They have an actual Major League Baseball team there.
They might sell it out more than the Mariners do, who are red hot.
They're in the playoff chase. What are we doing? I've been reading reports because, you know, they say keep your friends close, keep your enemies closer. That's a saying in life.
Is it?
One of my enemies is the Washington Huskies. You know who's looking really good in fall camp?
Yeah, my guy, DeMond.
DeMond Williams, looking really good. I was reading our boy Christian Capel yesterday.
Yeah, on Montlake.
Biggest takeaway from day whatever it is of fall camp.
I love that you don't know it.
Oh, boy. DeMond Williams going to dominate the dojo. He is a very interesting quarterback for me going into this year because last year he showed a ton of flashes, man. Like, he's a great athlete.
He was, like, the only thing in that Oregon game that was worth watching
And he was even sacked 10 times in that game, but he threw a couple of nice passes, ran around, made some plays. The bowl game, I kind of, you know, I think bowl games are hard to get a read on, especially at that level, because who the hell is playing? Who's in the lineup? Who's not? Like, it's just, I think, I'll use an example. Last year, or 2 years ago would have been, do you remember what Nico did in his bowl game for Tennessee?
Yeah, the hype going.
I can't remember who they played. They tore somebody up, and he looked great. And not that Nico was terrible last year.
Miller Moss also did this in a bowl game.
Right. Like, it's just hard to get a read on the bowl games because, again, you just, you know, is the entire starting defense out for the other team? Are you playing third stringers? I have no clue. They don't matter a lot anymore. But I do think the potential and the hype of him is something that is worth keeping an eye on going into this year in the Big Ten and just what his ceiling is as a guy who is clearly an elite athlete. But also, and you know, I can say this as a short king, he's a little limited in height. He's a tiny-ass dude. And just wondering what that looks like long-term as a college quarterback.
Well, it's, you know, it's not that Washington's going to win 10 or 11 games this year. I think they could win 9. I think they're that
great year if they did. If they win 9 games, that's a huge year for them.
They're going to need to pull off an upset, I think, between Ohio State and Oregon when they host both of them. But I'm kind of surprised to hear that you take. The short stuff. You just had a 5'8 quarterback.
We did.
Year,
and we did.
Gabriel much more established, obviously, than DeMond has so
far. But I think
far.
He had his he had his moments where he had ups and downs in his career, and I think it showed at the end.
The red
zone. In the red zone, he struggled, and he struggled going over the middle of the field at times. And I think that's a thought of Oregon's offense, is can they be better in the passing game? Because he can, Dante Moore or Novacek, can see the field better.
I think you're going to get a real clear indication about him and the system with Jed Fish and company pretty early. I'm almost wondering if he is going to be somewhat of a Kyler Murray clone. You know, pitter-patter everywhere.
He had 282 rushing yards on the season last year. Some of that was, again, sacks kind of derailed him.
Well, he also didn't play a whole lot.
No, he did not.
So I just wonder if he's going to use his legs more and make more of a mobile pocket than be traditional back, because he is shorter. But he also might just be able to understand and feel that system enough and have that trust with those wideouts to say, I don't need to escape here and move around. I think they're going to be a good team this year. And I think it's what makes the Oregon rivalry fun. And, you know, you look back on their season last year, it's somewhat of a quote-unquote disappointment. They had like three games that you're like, could have won that game, should have won that game.
Yep.
The Rutgers game, I remember we were talking about that one. Like
Wazoo.
Wazoo. I mean, yeah. My God, you know, short side of the field.
The other ones were blowouts, but they had two of them at least that could have gone.
And so what were they last year? 6-6?
6-6, I believe.
So, I mean, you're looking at an 8-4 season in what is a complete rebuilding of a season, and it's that thin a margin. Like, they can definitely be a 9-win team. So I'm not surprised to see he's having a good camp. I also, what does that say about the Husky defense? That's the other part of camp we don't talk about is...
Right, if your quarterback's torching it, does that mean your defense isn't good? Does
right.
that mean,
yeah. If a guy struggles, is your defense stout? Like, right. Is there any tie to that? It just, it's funny how camp used to be the most boring time.
Now it's all we care about.
And now in the NFL and college, Caleb threw three picks, bust. It's like, well, maybe he's trying stuff now. Yeah. You know, that used to be a thing.
Maybe their defense is good. Who the hell knows? But he's looking good early in fall camp, and it'll be an interesting year for the Huskies. Got to fix the offensive line. That was their biggest issue last year. I know they made a ton of additions in the portal. We'll see if it was enough for them, but you got Coleman back at running back, Boston back at wide receiver. They have the potential to upset some people and win some games this year if they can get better at the line of scrimmage. That is the massive question
mark
about them.
Yeah.
We got a lot to get to in the final hour of the show. Let's start with this idiot, almost a new theme of the show, the idiot of the weekend. Mm. Has to be this guy, and I'll explain why. We'll start the final hour there. Don't go anywhere. Dirt and Sprague on 105.1 FM, The Fan.